Recorder is on. And in the Kindle, we're at NTI Luke chapter 22, which in the Kindle is page 175. Where is it for the paperback book?
176.
176 for the paperback book. All right, NTI Luke chapter 22. The thoughts within your mind can seem to take you in circles. Anybody disagree with that? You can seem to move from understanding to confusion at lightning speed, which makes you dizzy. Do not let this concern you. When this seems to happen within your mind, you are witnessing your own resistance, struggling in a fight for survival. Remember that I have told you this is your fear of healing. Remember, I have shown you that your fear of healing must be sickness. Bless you, Peter. Be grateful that your sickness has come to the surface where it may be healed. Remember that the way in which you let sickness be healed is simply to rest in its presence. So this is an interesting perspective. Obviously, it's what we would call a Holy Spirit perspective. The average person, you know, again, I'm imagining that I was normal and therefore you're like me. That's what I'm imagining. I could be wrong. The average person gets very excited by clarity, you know, and then gets upset when the confusion returns. And you're like, we're happy with clarity and we're unhappy with confusion. And what Holy Spirit is saying is be happy with confusion too. Because this confusion needs to rise to the surface to be healed. So when the confusion rises up and you're feeling not clear right now, that's not anything you need to be worried about or be upset about. Be happy that it's coming up to be healed, and then just kind of move into like a rest, accept, and trust. You know, don't get too caught up in your confusion. Just let it be there, but trust that Holy Spirit's taking care of it, and kind of stay in a neutral place until it moves on and your clarity returns. So it's kind of a different perspective. Most of us, without Spirit giving us that perspective, we don't even think of that. We just naturally are unhappy when we feel confused. And Spirit's saying, no, it's unnecessary. Unnecessary to be unhappy with that. It's good that everything's arising up to be healed. Do not get caught up in the struggle to understand what cannot be understood. Remember, I have told you that this is a ploy of resistance. Instead, rest. Give your faith and willingness to me that you may be healed through your decision to rest and trust. Not everything about truth can be understood with the intellectual mind. There are some things about truth that the intellectual mind can actually understand and say, okay, I get that, you know. But there are other things that can just never be understood. And if we keep trying to get to where the intellectual mind can understand everything, then we stay stuck in this place that is not fully accepting truth. It's wanting intellectual understanding to come first. One example that came to me just this week is, you know, one thing that I have, I'm going to say more of, because it feels more consistent. One thing that I have more of is just this knowing that everything is perfect, you know, just knowing. And yet, you know, every now and then when I tell someone that I know that, well, then they'll put some story in front of me and want to explain, well, how is this perfect? You know, how is it perfect that people get killed in car crashes, right? How is it perfect that, you know, that Israel is shooting missiles at Palestinians when they don't have missiles to shoot back? You know, how is all of this stuff perfect? And what occurred to me this week is the reason I can't answer those questions is because this feeling that everything is perfect isn't coming from the world. It's not about the world. It's beyond the world. And what's happening is I am becoming more and more in touch with what is not a part of the world. And that's what I'm feeling. And you can't explain what's not a part of the world using the world's stories. In fact, one example that came to my mind is that would be like trying to describe the taste of a watermelon using a hamburger as an example. You know, you get somebody a hamburger and a bite into that. Okay, now here's what a watermelon tastes. And you just can't. They're too different. So you can't use the world's stories to explain how everything is perfect. That's not where the feeling of perfection is even coming from, right? So The mind can't understand that everything is perfect, yet somehow that awareness arises anyway. If you don't keep trying to understand it. But if every time somebody comes to you with the question, well, how is it perfect that, you know, this boy died this way, and you go, oh my, well, let me see if I can explain that. You're going to go right back, you'll feel it. You'll go right back into ego, you'll feel the tension in your head, you know, and here you are trying to reconcile truth and illusion. Right? The Course says you can't reconcile truth and illusion, so the best that you can do is give yourself a headache. That's the best you can do. You know? So that's what this is saying also. Don't try to understand what can't be understood. You know, let go of this idea. And of course, this comes from the belief that really, I am my thinking mind, right? I am my intellect. And so if my intellect doesn't get it, I don't get it. But that's not true. You aren't your thinking mind. You aren't your intellect. And there is something in you, something that's beyond the intellect that can get it, but you would never be able to explain it like the feeling of perfection, right? Verses 7 to 38. There are two voices in your mind. This I have told you before, but this I say again because it is of the utmost importance. Your mind is split. This is why you hear two voices. One voice may be most easily identified as your thoughts, while the other voice, when you hear it, may seem to come from God. Do not be deceived by what seems to be the difference in these two voices. The one that seems closest to you is the voice that is furthest from your reality. And this is why you have been confused until now. Now, that was a true paragraph for me when it was written. It's no longer true, actually, which is nice. When a shift has occurred where actually I recognize what we call the Holy Spirit's thoughts as my real thoughts, and I recognize what we call the ego's thoughts as just meaningless ideas. So a shift has occurred. But that shift had not yet occurred for me when this was written. So when this was written, my thoughts were the thoughts, I'm guilty. I shouldn't have done that. I'll never get this. You know, those were my thoughts. And then when I sat down to write NTI, for example, and I would hear Spirit talking about, you know, my perfection, my innocence, those were God's thoughts, right? So these thoughts seem to be coming from some other. But what he's saying is, no, those are your real thoughts. And somewhere along the line, again, I can't tell you where, some kind of a shift started to occur, where it's true, those thoughts became my thoughts. And what's really fun about this is I recognize those thoughts as my thoughts, regardless of the physical source. So, you know, if Roger was to start speaking those thoughts, I would recognize that's my voice. I mean, they're my thoughts, regardless of the physical source. And one of the things I have fun with in Facebook is, you know, quoting other people when actually what I'm doing is just saying, ah, there's my thought. It looks like, you know, Susie said it, but it's my thought. And so I'll put it on my Facebook page and then say, you know, Susie Carter. But the reason I put it there is because I noticed it was my thought. So I never actually, in my mind, am posting another's thoughts. I'm just posting my thoughts regardless of where I see them come from. So that shift occurs, but at this point it wasn't true. At this point, my thoughts were the ego thoughts, at least that's how I perceived it. Sentence 10. Remember all that I have taught you. Remember the story of the vineyard, for that story will be most helpful to you now. And just as a reminder, and also this might be new for Roger, the story of the vineyard was when a landlord gave a vineyard to some tenants, and you know they were expected, of course, to give a certain amount of the produce to the landlord every year. But as they began to work the vineyard, they began to perceive it as theirs. They began to perceive the landlord as somehow their enemy. And when he sent servants to collect the rent, they beat him up. And when he finally sent his son to collect the rent, they killed him. And they just were fighting, you know, to keep what they perceived as theirs, right? So, remember all that I have taught you. Remember the story of the vineyard, for that story will be most helpful to you now. How is it that one who has stolen a vineyard would be likely to think? Right? And we saw how they're likely to think. They had to defend this vineyard now against the landlord, right? They were always expecting attack, and they always had to fight. Would he not feel like a betrayer and so feel guilty? Would he not expect some type of reprisal and so fear attack? Would he not prepare his own defense and also defend himself whenever he sensed the possibility of attack? These are the characteristics of the ego, which are the thoughts in your mind that are based on the belief that you have stolen your mind or yourself from God. If you observe your thoughts carefully, you will notice that these veins are inherent within their flow. So what he's really asking us to do is, you know, just when we're, you know, daydreaming, right? Thinking about our mother-in-law or, you know, our children or, you know, what we did when we were 15 or whatever, start noticing that these basic threads are in these stories in your mind. Notice that somewhere along the way you feel like a betrayer, or you feel guilty, or you feel unworthy, or you feel like you didn't do good enough, or you never do good enough. You know, you didn't play your role the way you were supposed to play your role. You know, notice that these are in your stories, right? And then notice also that you expect some kind of attack. When I was first looking at this, the story that really stands out in my mind was that I had bought a house in North Carolina, which had a really nice backyard. The house came with a really nice backyard. And then about 3 months after I moved to North Carolina, I got a dog. And within 6 months, the dog had, you know, dug up the plants and worn paths in the yard, and it was no longer this really nice yard. Well, my dad has always cared about nice yards. His yard is always very nice. He takes lots of care in his yard. And he was coming to visit me. And this story kept running through my mind about my dad walking in the door and being happy to see me, looking around, noticing the backyard, and then, how could you let that happen? You know, and then the attack comes, right? And so this story, I can't tell you how many times this story ran in my mind. My dad attacking me for the messed up backyard, me defending myself. He hadn't even arrived yet, you know? This is the mindset of the ego. The mindset expects attack, and it plans its defense. And I know you guys have all had these same kinds of things running off in your head. When I see this person, they're going to say this, then I'm going to say this, and right? You're totally expecting it. Or the ego is totally expecting it. And because you're identified with the ego, you are totally expecting it, right? So these are the characteristics of the ego, which are the thoughts in your mind that are based on the belief that you have stolen your mind or yourself from God. If you observe your thoughts carefully, you will notice that these veins are inherent within their flow. But I have already told you that it is impossible for you to have stolen yourself from God, for you are within God and you are one with God. Therefore, this entire flow of thought, all of which seems to have meaning for you, is based upon one meaningless, there we go, premise. What is based upon meaninglessness and built upon meaninglessness must also be meaningless. Any meaning it seems to have is only imagined, and what is imagined is not real. So this is pointing to that simplicity we were talking about before I turned the recorder on. So literally, if you can do this with honesty, I never ask people to do anything without a sense of self-honesty, of course. But if you can do this honesty, as soon as the story starts up in your mind, oh, you know, dad's going to walk through the door, he's going to say this, and then I'm going to say this. As soon as you notice that, you say, wait a minute, this story's meaningless, I'm making it up. And you drop it. This is meaningless. And the more you practice realizing that you are just making stuff up, and therefore it has no meaning, and you start dropping those stories in mid-telling instead of letting your attention to be focused on them, What eventually happens is that fewer and fewer of those stories begin to arise in the first place. But what's important is to see that the story is meaningless. It's made up. You're imagining it. And what's funny is that, you know, the average human, and I'm sure we've all had this experience, we are totally making up this story, and yet we don't stop for a moment to see that. We don't stop for a moment to realize this is a meaningless story that I'm making up while I'm doing dishes. I'm doing dishes, and I'm imagining my dad walking through the door attacking me. We give it so much meaning, you know, and we go on and on and on with the story. And then we rerun the story while we're vacuuming, and then we rerun the story while we're mowing the lawn, and then we rerun the story while we're driving to the supermarket, right? We give it so much meaning. And the simplicity of it is, it's meaningless. It's imagined. You're making it up, right? This is why I have asked you to evaluate your thoughts. Listen to the thoughts in your mind, whether they seem to be thoughts about you, someone else, or thoughts about the world. And even though this says listen to, I will tell you that this doesn't mean listen to and believe. This means look at, observe, right? Observe those thoughts. Pay attention to them with a new eye, right? Notice what's going on. So listen to the thoughts in your mind, whether they seem to be thoughts about you, someone else, or thoughts about your world. Are they not based on a belief in guilt that is based on a belief in separate wills, separate desires, or separate behaviors? Do they not include thoughts of fear, worry, or a sense of foreboding? And do you not take actions or have thoughts of defending and protecting yourself? All of this is meaningless because it is based on a false image of yourself and your world. It is based on the false belief that all that you experience is separate from the reality of God. So he's asking us to turn a watchful eye on our thoughts. And the truth is, when we're listening, when we're really listening to them and believing them, we actually aren't watching them. You can't watch your thoughts and be drawn into them at the same time. So the way I experience this is usually the being drawn into them happen first. And then somewhere in mid-daydream, I'd notice, here I am listening again. And then I would step back and watch what I had just listened to. That was kind of my experience, because the being drawn in was such a habit, right? With time, the habit breaks. But that was the habit in the beginning, was getting drawn right into whatever story my mind was telling. But as I stepped back and watched my thoughts, I found that, you know, this was just true. All of the stories, either I was guilty or someone else was guilty, somebody was to blame, you know. I was attacking someone or someone was attacking me. I was defending myself or someone was defending myself or someone was defending themselves to me. Or the other flavor of story was some kind of fear, worrying about running out of money, worrying about, you know, something, you know. So fear, attack, defense, guilt, unworthiness, this is what all the stories were about. I couldn't find any stories that didn't have at least some of these characteristics. And the funny thing was, what I noticed was, this is what my mind was doing the majority of the time. You know, the majority of the time was listening to these stories that had these basic components underneath them. And so I started dissecting the stories in a way. Like I said, the first story I really remember looking at was the story of my dad coming, you know, through the door and getting upset with me because the backyard was torn up. So I looked at that and I literally asked, okay, what components are in this story? Attack, defense, and guilt. You know, and then there were other stories which I don't remember the specifics of, but I would catch myself daydreaming, and then I would say, ah, wait a minute, what are the components of this story? Ah, attack, defense, and guilt. And I started looking past the story to the components, and I just saw that they were showing up in my mind all day long. And it literally became clear to me that really all I was thinking about was attack, defense, guilt, fear, blame, you know, these same things. All day long. Seemingly different stories, but the exact same building blocks. And that's the ego, which meant I was listening to ego all the time, right? Except for maybe an hour in the morning when I was focused on the course. Okay, so now he says, now let's talk about the other voice that you hear, the voice that seems to come from God, the voice that may seem to come to you as a knowing or an intuition, but when you trust it and do as it asks, you recognize it as God. This voice seems based on safety, an inherent and invulnerable safety. This voice seems based on love. This voice you call God because it seems to be everything that cradles and comforts and cares for you. And yet, recognition of the voice came from within you, which means something within you knows this voice and remembers this voice and recognizes its familiarity. What is within you, and therefore must be a part of you. If you are able to recognize the voice for God when you hear it, then God must be within you. And if God is within you, you cannot be separate from God. So I mentioned to you that at this period of time, you know, the vast majority of the day, these stories are running in my mind, and they had these ego components, but there actually was the morning time. And the morning time was when I sat down focused on the course and focused on receiving NTI. And during that, you know, I'm going to call it special time that was set aside each day, the types of thoughts I heard were completely different, right? That's when I was clear. That's when I was receiving clarity. And I did recognize the difference between clarity and ego. You know, I could feel the difference. I may have called it God. I may have called it Holy Spirit. I may have seen it still as an other at that point. But I did recognize it. And what this said to me is I recognized it from something within, something that was very familiar with God or very familiar with Holy Spirit, not as a distant stranger other, but as something that was actually closer to home than those stories that ran in my mind the majority of the day. And this was telling me that the reason I recognized truth when I heard it, whether I heard it through reading the course or heard it from an inner voice, the reason I recognized it is because it was talking about my reality. That's where the recognition was coming from, regardless of how faint it was. And I know we've all had that experience or we wouldn't be sitting here. I don't know what book you picked up first, whether it was A Course in Miracles, or in my case it was Peace Pilgrim, or, you know, whether it was Neil Donald Walsh or what it was. But at some point you picked up a book or you heard a teacher and something in you said, yes, right? Something in you knew, even though, you know, in the world, apparently, it was completely new information. And it was completely different from anything you'd ever heard before. But something new, right? And this is saying that that's actually the evidence that this voice that seems like a very faraway voice that you're having to learn, that recognition is the remembrance that that's actually your own voice. Those are your real thoughts. Otherwise, you wouldn't have recognized them the way you did. So starting with sentence 38, and so this is what you are to do. You know that you want the comfort and peace of God. Does anybody here doubt that? Okay, so we all know that. And now you know that this comfort and peace comes from within. So what you must do is choose the comfort and peace of God by denying anything that you recognize as alien to that comfort and peace. For if it is not of God, it does not exist. It is merely sickness born of imagined meaning. Or as I said, the thought that usually comes up in my mind is that it's confusion born of imagined meaning. Therefore, there is nothing to do with it except let it be healed. So when these thoughts come up, these thoughts of attack and defense, you know, really, you could simply ask yourself the question, wait a minute, is this story the comfort of God? And you, like, I mean, you can laugh at that because it's clear, it's so evident. No, this story about my dad coming through the door and attacking me is not the comfort of God. Well, then then this isn't a story I have to give my attention to, right? I can just drop that and go back to the comfort of God. And in fact, another thing that happened for me during this period of time is that's when the single quiet thought started coming to me. Every morning during that special time that I set aside, there would be a thought that would come every day. And some of you are familiar with them, the single quiet thoughts. And what I would do is write the thought down on a small slip of paper, and I would carry it in my back pocket. And at any point during the day when I noticed my mind had wandered off into ego land, then I would stop and I would say, wait a minute, I don't have to continue with this thought process. And I would bring up that thought, whatever the current thought of the day was, and I would use that to refocus my mind on God's thoughts. Because at that point, I was still so attached to the ego that you could say I needed a tool to refocus my mind back on God's thoughts. It wasn't that easy at that point. But these single quiet thoughts continued to come for a few years. And probably the one thing they did for me is they helped me to where I could naturally and easily just shift my mind. Whenever I noticed my mind had wandered off into the, you know, the ego direction, just shift it back over to my real thoughts. Just shift to my right mind. That became something that I could do. But in the beginning, it wasn't. So the single quiet thoughts were a part of that training. But what this is literally saying is, if you ask yourself, is this thought the comfort of God? And the answer is an obvious no, then you actually don't have to keep thinking it. You just don't have to. And if you do keep thinking it, what you're going to feel within yourself are the effects of continuing to think it. If it's a fear thought, you're going to feel fearful. If it's a guilt thought, you're going to feel guilty. If it's a hate thought, you're going to feel hate. Now, these emotions are not real things. They are the illusory effect of listening to and believing an illusory story. If you get to the point where you never listen to a hate story, as soon as the story shows up in your mind, you say, oh, I don't have to listen to that, and you let it go, you won't actually ever feel hate again. If you're able to, when a fear story shows up, say, wait a minute, I don't have to listen to this. This isn't the comfort of God. You will never feel fear again. Because the truth is, all of these emotions that you feel, which people call normal human emotions, they're the effect, the made-up effect, of listening to and believing stories that have those components. And so by seeing the stories as meaningless, you literally get to the point where you don't experience those emotions. Because they're not natural. They're not a natural part of what you are. So again, so starting with sentence 45, I love this paragraph. It's one of my favorite paragraphs in NTI. Where you see a need to defend, rest and let that perception be healed. Where you see fear, rest and let that perception be healed. Where you see guilt, rest and let that perception be healed. Whenever you think you are not worthy of all of the glory of God, rest and let that perception be healed. As you rest, you will be healed. Now, does everybody feel like they have an understanding of what the word rest means? Yeah, well, because not everybody does. That's why I asked. Because, you know, I was the scribes, like when the words came, I understood them. And it was probably a few years before I realized that not everybody did. So rest means to move your attention away from that story. That's what rest means. So again, if there's some fear story playing in your mind about how you're going to pay your bills, or maybe it's a fear story about how your kids are going to pay their bills, or, you know, anything that will capture your attention, you're not resting when you're in that story, you're spinning. Your mind is actually spinning with the story. You rest the mind by noticing, wait a minute, I'm listening to a story that is not the comfort of God. And you realize you don't have to listen to the story. And you rest by moving your attention away from that story and placing it back with the comfort of God. And there's a lot of different ways this can happen. You know, people who have mantras can just move their attention back to their mantra. Some people move their attention to their breathing. Some people move their attention to their course lesson or a single quiet thought. You know, there's a lot of different ways to move your attention away from the story and back to God-type thoughts, right? But that's resting your mind. When you move away from the story, then you're resting your mind. So listening is spinning. Moving your attention away from is resting. And when I first started doing this, I used, even before the single quiet thoughts came, I used self-talk. I mean, I would literally say to myself, ah, I'm listening to an ego story again. I do not have to listen to an ego story. I can rest now. This is not a story that I have to listen to. I can rest now. I mean, I would just say that. But do you see how even that is pulling my attention away from the story and placing it in a more restful place? So when you see a need to defend, you know, you're imagining somebody attacking you, or maybe their parents is right there. Maybe your boss is right there telling you what a lousy job you did today. This thought comes up, I need to defend myself. You know, I need to explain. This is saying actually rest instead. Take a deep breath. You know, rest. That's one of the hardest things I found to learn, was not to defend myself. But actually, when you get the hang of it, it's quite fun. Yeah, it's quite fun.
That's my question, is because when you are attacked,
yeah,
then, you know,
every
ego wants to jump out there right away.
Right away. Yeah, and every attack, you can measure this if you want to. You can go home and chart it on an Excel chart. Every attack lasts longer in your mind. So if I'm your boss, I can come up to you and I can tell you what a lousy job you did. I might spend 5 minutes telling you what a lousy job you did. How long are you going to carry that story?
Well, before this course, for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that's why it becomes fun once you get the hang of not defending yourself, because by not defending yourself, you actually don't jump into the game, you could say. And what starts happening is it starts ending sooner. You may still feel attacked in the moment, but somehow, you know, if it's not over as soon as you walk out the door, it's over within 5 minutes of walking out the door, whatever. You're not carrying it around for a month or a year. And eventually what happens is that, you know, someone's sitting there, you know, seemingly attacking you. What you would have heard is an attack before, and now somehow you're hearing it different. You're like, oh, I see. You expected this, and I thought it was this. And then you can have a conversation with them, because you start to actually hear them. When you thought you were attacked, you didn't even hear them. You know? And so at some point, when that idea that you're being attacked is completely gone, which again, in my experience, it happened in phases. I'm told these things can happen instantly, and I think that's super, but it wasn't my experience. You know, but eventually, you know, somebody's attacking you, like, you know, you would have called it an attack, and instead you're like, oh wow, this person's upset. And you can hear. And then you can see, and then you have clarity, and then you can respond differently. And then the seeming attack, even on their end, ends very quickly, because you came from a completely different place in the conversation, right? So, but it all starts with you not jumping in and playing your role of being defended. And now this doesn't have to be this way for you, if you choose to be a better student than I was, which I give you permission, okay? I found it very difficult in the beginning to just accept an attack and not defend myself. It took a lot of willpower, you could say. That's what it felt like. It took a lot of willpower. I wanted to jump in there and defend myself, but I didn't. And I didn't because I wanted to get past seeing attack. That was the motive. And then with time, it got easier not to defend, and then I wasn't carrying the story as long, and then pretty soon, you know, again, when there's what I would have called an attack before, it doesn't even seem like an attack. It's just, oh, this person's upset. And that's a completely different perception. Oh, this person's upset. You know? Mm-hmm. Then they're attacking me.
I had my eyes really opened when it was the other way around. I was attacking someone, and they remained silent.
Yeah.
And I had diffused all my anger, and it really opened my eyes. Just that dynamics that you're talking about,
yeah.
Being on the other side too. So that really taught me to remain quiet when I felt attacked.
Yes.
And the other person stops attacking when you remain quiet.
Yeah, it's like a game. It's like ping pong. Attack, defense. If somebody quits playing, the game has to end. So, all right, so sentence 50. Oh, gosh, we went really long on this one. Within the mind of health, you will receive guidance. Trust and follow your guidance. It comes but from your true self, which is based on truth, not illusion. So again, if you step out of your confused mind, you will receive guidance. And so even if we are talking about the appearance of somebody attacking you and you choose not to jump right into the defense, you choose to take a breath, you then will probably start feeling at least an intuitive level to say nothing or to ask a simple question like, can you tell me more what you mean by that? Or, you know, you'll start somehow this other way of being will come that would not have come if you jumped into the defense. It starts to show up. But that other way of being in the situation will not show up if you jump with the ego, right? Because it's going to be too loud and you won't hear the other way of being. So, and lots of people say, I don't hear Holy Spirit. That's a very popular belief. You know, people have that. But that's just not true of anyone. That's never true. Maybe you don't recognize it as Holy Spirit, and that's okay. You don't have to. But it is that other way of being that shows up when you choose not to go with ego. It is that feeling that you have, okay, just stand here and say nothing, you know, or ask this question, or that's Holy Spirit. And everybody hears it if they give themselves the chance by not running off with ego. All right, so we'll go ahead and stop there. I started to say next week we will begin with verse 39, but actually next week there will be no class because next week I'm going to visit my mom in Alabama. All right? So we're going to miss just 1 week, and I will send out an email too, but just 1 week, so we'll be back 2 weeks from tonight. Let me go ahead and give the assignment for the week while the recording's on for those who listen to the recording. I would say the assignment this week is to start paying attention to the stories in your mind when they happen, and they will happen, and start noticing what are the components. Notice, is this attack and defense story? Is this a guilt and blame story? Is this an unworthiness story? Is this a fear story? And just start trying to look past the story to what's underneath it, what's really going on in your head. And just notice. That's all I'm asking you to do. Notice. Where is your head? That's it. Okay? So let me turn off the recorder, and then we'll go into some silence.